Incredible. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Charles Clippert. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Justin Watson. And Mr. Watson pled guilty to his involvement in an unintentional murder, too. And during the plea hearing, it looks like no one really knew where he was on his points. And that's very common, unfortunately, when someone has an out-of-state conviction. People kind of have to estimate as best they can. When he came back for sentencing, he was sentenced in accordance with a plea agreement and a guideline sentence. He subsequently contacted our office and asked for a review of his criminal history score, and that's the overlying principle here, is to make sure that he's sentenced with an appropriate criminal history score. And our contention is that there's an Illinois drug possession case that should have been sentenced as a gross misdemeanor rather than a felony. And the real issue is the court's equating a situation where no sentence is pronounced to a stay of imposition of sentence. But I'm going to back up to the first factor is to whether the offense in Minnesota would have been a felony. And in this case, actually, an Illinois Class D felony, the statutory authorized sentence is no less than a year to 3 years. So by definition, this could have been a gross misdemeanor in Minnesota because the low end of that statutory sentence is a gross misdemeanor level offense. The drug quantity weight would bring it into a felony level, but again, the authorized statutory sentence of no less than a year is a factor that should weigh into treating this as a gross misdemeanor. The other factor is that no sentence was actually pronounced. And I was a district court public defender for 10 years, and I probably have sat next to hundreds, if not thousands, of clients who are sentenced to a stay of imp. And it's actually a pronounced term of the sentence. I've never had a judge say, I am not going to pronounce the term of sentence and place you on probation, and then have the charge reduced to a misdemeanor upon completion of probation. I can't think of a time when that has happened. I have always had a judge pronounce, I stay in position of sentence and place you on probation pursuant to Minnesota statute 609.13. And then the judge typically advises the person that upon successful completion of probation, the charge is reduced to a misdemeanor. So the stay of imposition of sentence is really a term of art here in Minnesota.
And doesn't exist in Illinois.
Does not exist in Illinois. And so the fact that no sentence is pronounced is not the same as the judge pronouncing a stay of imposition of sentence.
But what you're describing sounds the exact same as a stay of execution. We differentiate between the two. I mean, what I'm getting at is your comments about pronouncement of sentence and how judges are trained to pronounce sentence. What would then be the difference between a stay of execution and a stay of imposition?
But at the stay of execution, the judge then pronounces a term of a sentence and stays it. So that.
But I thought that's what you were saying happened here, that what you were saying is very, what you were describing, excuse me, let me speak clearer, was that fact that you're saying a judge states what the sentence is and then stays in position.
Right.
Isn't that a stay of execution, though?
Right. But here, there was no sentence was pronounced in Illinois. No term of imprisonment was pronounced, and that's why.
But what I'm trying to say to you is that's the difference between a stay of imp and a stay of execution.
And that's why this one doesn't really fit clearly into either a stay of ex, a stay of imp, or I was very tempted to argue this was a petty misdemeanor because he was given 45 days of...
Okay, maybe I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about your history with trial court judges and that this was common to state what the term was and
yes.
Then stay in position.
Yeah,
I'm quarreling with you and I'm saying that's not how trial court judges are taught in terms of how to pronounce sentence.
No, I think we're...
Okay.
But when I, in my trial court experiences, judges say I stay in position of sentence and place then the terms of probation, chemical health assessment, follow
okay,
the recommendation.
Correct, I agree. Okay.
Right.
All right, we're just talking two different things. Thank you.
Right, no. And so, again, that's why I think the sentencing record here from Illinois does not establish it was a stay of imposition of sentence. There was no sentence pronounced. And that's why we have to look at the other terms of that sentence, and that's why the two-year stay, I think, more accurately reflects a gross misdemeanor rather than a stay of imp on a felony, because, again, that term was never pronounced.
Mr. Clifford, we have unpublished authority, which I'm sure you're aware of, Burke v. State, mm-hmm. which really seemed to be, you know, factually very similar, same issue, clearly unpublished,
right.
So persuasive, not precedential. But this court found at that time that under, and it was another Illinois conviction without stay of imposition, and we did decide that it would, you know, constitute a felony here. Why is this case different from Burke?
It's actually the language in those, there's another unpublished opinion as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's Rhodes as well.
Right.
Burke. They seem to just kind of jump to the conclusion that the sentence, that no sentence being imposed, they say is the functional equivalent of a stay of imposition of sentence. And I couldn't disagree more, because by operation of statute on a stay of imp, the charge is reduced to a misdemeanor. And that does not appear to be what happens in Illinois. In Illinois, they say, we, you know, if there's a violation, we can come back and sentences can be imposed and additional terms can be imposed as well. And that's what happens here. If someone's on a, even on a stay of X, they violate probation, they come back in, the judge orders them to serve a consequence, and then chemical health assessment, 45 days in the workhouse, whatever the conditions are. So I don't see this functional equivalent. I think those opinions are mistaken when they make that equivalency, because it's not.
And I think I need a little bit more help with that. What's not in a stay of imposition? Obviously, if there's a violation of the conditions, the sentence will then be imposed. And what is the difference in Illinois with respect to what happens here? In that case, there are conditions imposed, and if they're violated, will a sentence be imposed at that time?
Right. That's what the Illinois sentence says, is that, or the, excuse me, the Illinois statute says, is that if there's a violation, the judge can impose a sentence at some point or other conditions.
And how does that differ then from functionally from a stay of imposition? I'm not quite seeing it yet.
The statute does not, in Illinois, does not mandate or require that upon successful completion of probation that the charge gets reduced to a misdemeanor.
And you think that's a necessary part, the reduction to a misdemeanor, necessary part of a stay of imposition?
Yes.
Okay. Because I mean, that's what the Minnesota statute calls
right,
it.
And that's, I mean, that's what the benefit of the stay of imposition of sentence is so that if I get a stay of imp on a motor vehicle theft and I complete probation, I can then apply to jobs and say I'm not a felon, in theory. It's perhaps not as strong a remedy as it once was, but that's the benefit of the stay of imposition of sentence. And again, I don't see that in that Illinois statute, that you get this automatic reduction to a misdemeanor. So I don't think that this Illinois conviction matches either the offense would be a felony in Minnesota, again, based on the statute, and it was a sentence that was imposed, a felony level sentence. So, and the other thing that this court just, I guess we need to be aware of, is with the gross misdemeanor offenses now in Minnesota, this is going to get a little bit more complicated going forward, because the drug weight is going to become a bigger issue, because we now have, I think anything under a quarter gram is now a gross misdemeanor. So it's just not a matter of looking at the whether a sentence was imposed. It's all these factors, and when you consider them all, I think the better way to treat this would be as a gross misdemeanor. So I recognize this is a very narrow issue, and I don't want to take any more time if the court doesn't have any questions. No, so we'd ask that his matter be resentenced.
And you will have time for rebuttal if you'd like to use it.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Todd Zettler. I represent respondent, state of Minnesota. The question in this case is whether the district court abused its discretion in sentencing. And that's the question we're answering, not whether specifically Illinois does one thing or another. It's whether the district court in this case abused its discretion. And in answering that, it's helpful to look at what this court and what Minnesota courts have done with similar convictions. And the court mentioned State versus Rhodes, which is the unpublished opinion from this court, finding that Illinois does not have the equivalent term of a stay of imposition, but that it is the equivalent of a stay of imposition of sentence. And in Burke, this court did the same thing and found that a 24-month probationary period, and I quote, is the equivalent of a stay of imposition of sentence in Minnesota. And then more recently, in a not unpublished, i.e. a published opinion, this court in Williams versus State found that the Illinois boot camp was a equivalent of a stay of imposition, I'll quote, the equivalent of a stay of imposition under the Minnesota sentencing guidelines. So in a published decision, this court has found that similar Illinois sentences are equivalent to and should be treated as stays of imposition for felony sentences. Now, Williams was petitioned for review and was appealed to the Minnesota Supreme Court and was affirmed on a different basis. It specifically did not address this, which means that this is the last word on this law. So the district court in this case certainly did not abuse its discretion by following Burke, by following Rhodes, by following Williams. It followed every Minnesota appellate case on this issue, and they are all consistent. That is not an abuse of discretion. I would also mention, as far as it, the possibility of it not being a felony in Minnesota because it runs from 1 year to 3 years, that was never raised to the district court. That's being raised for the very first time on appeal. And if you look at the petition that he filed in the district court, the sole argument was that the 24-month probationary period makes it a gross misdemeanor. There was no argument, no mention, no articulation of this other issue. So I would argue that that is waived.
And if it weren't, what would your response be?
That it is their burden to prove that it is not a felony at this point, and that's from Williams from the Supreme Court. The burden shifts. So the state carried its burden in the district court, and now that it is their burden to prove that it is not a felony, they can't do that. Well, all they can show is that statutorily it is possible to sentence somebody to 1 year under some circumstances. But that means that under virtually every other condition, i.e. a year and a day up to 3 years, it's a felony. So they've failed to carry their burden, if it is even addressed at this point. But I would argue waiver. Unless the court has any questions, I would ask this court to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Zettler. Mr. Clifford?
Everyone comes up and says on rebuttal, just briefly, but here we go. actually, the record actually from the district court is a little askew, because even though I would admit that I'd argued or focused mostly on the 24-month term, the district court's order seemed to suggest I was arguing was a stay of imposition of sentence in my post-conviction petition. So the district court kind of missed the issue in their order, and you know, it's properly raised here before this court, so there's no surprise it's statutory. And as to the burden, this is kind of way off the record. When I got this case, I wrote to Scott County Probation and said, what are your records on this? So the records are what the records are, and the burden I don't think is a big issue here, because the record is attached to our brief, and that's what it is, and that's what the court has to consider. So I think this court can look at those documents and say, yes, the district court did abuse its discretion, and that's what we're asking this court to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. Case has been submitted.